Hello, this is another post-shutdown Cohen Meander recording. Every time you try to shut something down, you always got reasons to keep doing it. So just keep doing it. Listening to a talk. Sadly, I can't tell you what day it was, so that you can actually look it up. But you can. His name is Devin, which is D-E-V-N, Cornish. I found it made me feel better about what I'm up to. And that it is going to be efficacious in doing good things. I think the title is something along the lines of, am I doing enough? Am I good enough? Something along those lines. All I can say is at the end of it, I felt better. I often feel like I should have done more with myself than I have. I'm very sure my parents would agree. Although I think it might have gotten better in the last few years. Regardless. Curse of smart people, and you go, ooh, how presumptuous to say that you're smart. I only say it because other people have said it in reference to me in situations where they had no call to do it. They weren't trying to get anything from me or something. One of my schoolmates from middle school happened to just send me a little message on Facebook Messenger, you know, and said, hey, do you remember me? And I said, yeah. You know, in the normal pleasantries for these kinds of situations, I guess. Hope you're doing well. And he said, you know, the primary thing I remember about you when we were kids, and this is when we were in our mid-50s, you know, a lot of time under the stream. We were like 13, 14 years old. I was only at that school with him for 2 years. Anyway, and he came back and he said, I just remembered that you were really, really smart. And I don't think it, I don't think that the conversation persisted much past that. He was just a guy. When he gave the name, I could picture him almost like from a yearbook. I don't think we had a yearbook. Or if we did, I didn't purchase it. You know, just kind of like a snapshot of what he looked like. It's like, oh yeah, I do. You know? But it's things like that. People who come up and say they're smart. Now, people don't often say you're smart because that's not very, you know, we just don't do that. I don't know if it's a cultural thing or what. It's like asking somebody how much money they make. It's bad form. Just don't do it. If you're really interested, you just have to kind of look around at all the accoutrements they have and wonder how much debt they either did or did not get into to acquire the accoutrements. But anyway, so I'm not saying I'm smart because I think I'm smart, although from several things that I've been able to do, and usually not very interesting things, there's plenty of evidence that says I'm a really smart guy. It says, and let me tell you, that is, at least for me, it ends up being more of a curse than a blessing. My issues with anxiety over discontent. When people say that they have anxiety, it's like you need to finish that sentence. Anxiety over what? Because it isn't a thing independently. Doctors who get into this stuff are pill pushers. I'm sorry. And many doctors are pill pushers. I'm going to be immediately rude. Enough of them are that you need to be somewhat skeptical of what they're doing. My wonderful wife, Lisa, can tell a story about a pill pusher and how it worked out. Anyway, I know what I'm primarily anxious about, which is, have I risen to the station, to the level to which a person of my smartness should? Like I said, I'm sorry. Being smart is more of a curse than it is a blessing. It does so many strange things to people and makes us nigh on to impossible to live with. I'm always constantly amazed by the fact that Lisa even wants to spend time with me because I drive her nuts. Constant babble of things. What do they call it? Logorrhea. It's kind of diarrhea of the mouth. A lot of people get caught up in that issue. I learned to be really quiet before, but when I got with Lisa, she kind of turned on the spigot. Can't really turn it off. And I'm still, I always am trying to work through whether I've lifted myself to the level I should be at. You know, I've always struggled to and said, you know, I need to go get my PhD. And they go, why? And they go, because I can. You should have the best word for it? I've used it in the past. You should have the status. That's close. Call it the accoutrements, I guess. You should have the stuff that smart people by law are supposed to have. The only problem is that when you have it, you often get shoehorned into situations where if you get your PhD, you're kind of stuck into going into the academy, which may or may not be a bad thing. I might enjoy the academy very much, not so much as a teacher, although you're often in a position of having to do that, but that you get to play with people at a certain level. I find a certain amount of my frustration is that I am among people who aren't smart. And that's not the only attribute to have. Or necessarily even one of the good ones to have. Smart people brought us really crazy ideas like socialism and communism. Those are smart things. Are they wrong? Yes, on the scale that people would like to accomplish them, they're wrong. It's like the difference between Marx, who came up with communism, and Lenin, Stalin, who are technicians who were trying to accomplish, trying to bring it into reality. And the atrocities that they performed to get this done. And the atrocities that we are still willing to do. Most of the people who are willing to put forth effort to put forward a soft form of communism called socialism, often called convenient idiots. And everybody says, oh, how rude to call them that. You go, it's okay. It just says that they aren't the smart guys that think this thing up. They are attracted to it for often puerile reasons. Mostly that they aren't going to have to work hard. I'll hear stories about the 1 month off from work that everybody in the Soviet Union had or were forced to use. I know this fellow that I used to work with, he never took days off unless he was sick, and he was rarely sick. He would always give back all of the leave time that were given to him, even when it was, you know, they said, if you don't take it, you're going to lose it. And he said, I don't care. I think it was a matter of, he's a very smart guy, very smart guy. But he was also, he also kept his smartness somewhat to himself. I learned later on that he did a lot of photography. I didn't sit there and try to ascertain whether it was good. I just noticed that this was something that he did. And, but anyway. They forced you to, and they told you what kind of activities you could do. For the most part, you weren't given a choice. Parts of the Soviet Union were attached to the Black Sea, and you would go to a Black Sea resort, which was run by more communists, and you would get food. I don't know how good the food was. And you would have the organized activities, and you just knew that you had to be a part of it. It was one of the cultural things of communism that you had to be a part of whatever they were doing. Weird Al Yankovic. Novelty. Music man, who right now just has gotten tired of doing novelty music for right now. One of the titles of his albums was called Mandatory Fun. And that's exactly what that thing is. You know, communism was to a large part the scientific management of the creature. And to live under communism was to live in a rat maze. technically had everything that anybody thought human beings required to do stuff. You know, mandatory fund down by the Black Sea. People in the United States get grumbly and wish they had that, but they don't understand what it really was, which was you were part of a certain group, this A through B. You were on, you know, your quote vacation happened between this day and this day on the calendar. Every time planners get involved in anything, it starts getting really structured and you have to do certain things. And it's done by how you're designated by the system. You know, you're going to be going to certain conferences. If it was being run by the Communist Party, they would dictate exactly everything around it. You would get fed, although the food was often somewhat pathetic because it was as much as could be contrived and engineered, and it just got down to being just cheap, and there was no, and there were no real resources to make it particularly good or particularly anything. It was just there to say it was done. Anyway, so that's why you have to avoid smart people. Smart people are too willing to press you into those kinds of circumstances. I'm also very austere. Point of being ascetic on some levels. Even though now I have money, I've taught myself not to be very ascetic, which on some level can be kind of virtuous, but usually not, because it takes away too much from life. I have a sincere problem with having fun. I just can't do it. In fact, I don't know how to have fun. And it's worrisome to be around a group of smart people, to find your group of peers. Everybody says it's so desperately important. Because usually among smart people, what happens are contests to outwit each other. Very intricate ones. And it's absolutely horrendous. And so, yeah, am I interested in being around them? No, because I don't want that. So, yeah. Anyway, it comes back to how best to use your smarts in ways that don't make you insane, crazy, or evil. There is a lot of evil that comes from smartness. And your best, I don't know. Every individual person has to find their own way. So, my wife is doing a good job to keep me from getting my PhD and trying to get wrapped up in that kind of a world. Which will probably make Lisa a pauper, continue to be a pauper. I think she's willing to do that to a certain extent, but she wants to have me around. I don't get that. But anyway, she does. So it's my job to make sure that happens and to find some joy in it. I love Lisa. I like being with Lisa, and she puts up with me, and I'm grateful. Oh. Well, anyway, as I, there was also another video that I was watching from a reasonably smart guy. On first blush, I disagreed with him several times vehemently. But I think it probably had to do with how he was stating something. And he called it agency. And I guess his basic idea, or the way I interpreted it, was that his basic idea was, is that people are basically going to choose which reward they get after death and judgment. This is a religious matter, or it's beyond religion. It's the metaphysical afterlife reality. And he is reasonably sure that people pretty much pick where they want to go. The judgment, it almost seems like he says that judgment isn't really a thing. And I disagree with that. Otherwise, God wouldn't say anything about it. Except that God wants to set up circumstances that try to compel people to strive forward. That's definitely a godly thing. Now he's got to come through with everything he says he's going to do. Our concept of judgment may bear no resemblance to what God has chosen to try to translate as judgment, which basically determining where you're going to go because it's a final thing. It really has to do with what kind of person you are at the end of the day, I think. It really isn't much about what you want. It's the kind of person that you are, you know, and I've always said that the celestial kingdom, the third kingdom, which is analogous to the world we live on now, is just for your run-of-the-mill guy. Doesn't really keep commandments. Is more interested in pleasures than sacrifice. And that for a lot of people, I don't know if it's really what they want, but it's what they end up being. And that's why Bruce was talking about that they're going to get what they want. And I go, I don't think so, because a lot of people want more than what they probably are willing to work for. I think Heavenly Father is a conservator of capacity, capability, or, you know, it's not really that, because almost everybody has the capacity and the capability. It really ends up what you truly are, what you have become. It really comes down to Every intelligence comes into the next phase once there is a, and I guess this is somewhat of a judgment thing. Once you go from being a intelligence to being a spirit, there's no going back. Everything has kind of one of those stanchions that effectively don't let you go back. And I don't mean that it's kind of like that. No, it really is like that. Once you step out of being an intelligence, go into being a spirit, you can never return to being what you were. It doesn't matter how much you would like to do so. That's why I get so crazy about people talking about returning to your Heavenly Father. You never return to the past. You can't relive the past. Something you should learn to know to no end during mortality is you can't go back to the past. It just isn't going to happen. It doesn't matter how much you try to set up, you know, future world or west world or stuff like that. I often think most of our ranchers around us are deep nostalgia people. They really want a lifestyle much different than the modern one. I don't blame them. I'm not a fan of the old. Of course, we kind of put aside the nasty parts of it. Kind of like the back to the land movement. The majority of people who try to go back to the land give it up. Because to a large extent, you simply cannot. Things have changed. Things have moved on. We've got other things now. There aren't the kind of things that you used to have. Like, you know, it says, we used to have laundry services. You could bring your dirty clothes to a laundry person, a laundress, somebody, and they would do your laundry, iron it, all that stuff. Something that we've kind of gotten out of is ironing today, because that was only useful back in the day when people who did ironing, it was actually something you were paid for. You might not get paid all that much, but it paid you something. Can't be nostalgic. And, you know, ranchers are probably among the worst. They keep a bunch of horses because they kept horses when they were kids. Their parents could. Because the whole world was set up so that it was a world that worked best on horseback. Now it's kind of this weird hobby. I'd say most of ranching is just kind of a very interesting hobby. The fact that you can still make enough money off it, it's right up there with people that make custom boots or people who make custom fishing lures. Is there money to be made doing it? You go, yes. And you go, you know, it's difficult now when you have a fishing lure making factory that you're in competition with, and they get the bulk of the business. What business there is in making fishing lures, or, you know, or anything that's just kind of like that, and you're competing by saying, I make this really good fishing lure, and you're gonna pay me $100 for it. When you say I can go down to the local bait shop and get a machine-made fishing lure for about $5. And, you know, there's still something to be said for running something in a boutique way, but you really have to be invested in the whole thing. Back in the old days, every cowboy had Sunday boots. And there was a lot of cowboys, a lot more than we have now. And so it was a thing that you had to spend quite a bit of money to get yourself Sunday boots. And you'd wear your Sunday boots for a while, and then after they kind of got scuffed up and screwed up and not really worth keeping up with, they would become your work boots. And then, you know, you would gradually get down to the fact to where you are actually throwing out shoes. But they were usually so worn out and so disgusting that there was no remainder market for it. Which is now an industry now, is thrift stores. There's people that make money doing that. Don't make a lot of money, but they make some. And anyway, I don't know how I got off onto that tangent, which I always do. Let me come back and try to make some kind of a some kind of a purpose I was going toward, which is this. He said, there are some people that want exaltation. That is what the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints is ostensibly geared to do. Now, funny, they almost never cater toward that group. The whole point is you are trying to encourage people to join the group. So you have activities, you have rituals, you have all of the accoutrements of a church not made to fulfill the spiritual needs of a certain group, but to constantly bring in more people to this group. And the basic activity is to bring more people into the group to keep doing this thing that you're doing. And it's very bizarre. Now, I think that's why the LDS Church is often looked at as a cult. Because it doesn't spend time suiting itself for anything else. Can I tell you that it's kind of a weird thing? Because God is kind of a weird thing. And when people say they don't want to be part of the Mormon Church, I understand that. I understand that completely. They aren't interested. And you go, no, it's not interesting to a lot of people. If you just want to go to a church where people like you are sitting around and you guys all enjoy being together, and the church is kind of your community center for being together, because we've ruined communities in our kind quasi-socialistic push to have a little bit of everybody. You know, you're supposed to have your rich people, but rich people like having their toilets scrubbed. So they need to have some poor people around who are willing to scrub toilets and get paid pennies on the dollar for it. Which is what rich people really like. That's usually how rich people in America, for instance, got rich in the first place, was by pinching their pennies. As opposed to being royalty, royalty treats their servants often much, much better than Americans or free market capitalist sorts do. Because free market capitalists are trying to get the cheapest labor they can and get the most out of it while paying the least. And that's why monarchies suffer so badly. Is because they don't have that kind of mentality. Of course, everybody says that they're bad because they didn't earn what they have. You know, they took it, or one of their ancestors took it by force, and nobody else took it away from them yet. Anyway. So, church has this weird, this weird reality that it works with. And it really becomes the whole thing of, is this what you want to spend your life doing? Is this what God does? If you ever wonder what God is up to here, it is human development. Or what he does, which is just further human development. Now, some people say that we're going to start running out of stuff. There's a scarcity thing, which isn't true. There's abundance. God made abundance on this earth. And there is abundance in whatever, reality, creation, however you want to say it. The playing field upon which God does what he does. And he has a work, and he doesn't stop doing that work. He continues doing it all the time. He's got it down now to where it's a system. I don't know if it's always been a system, but it's a system. And he is kind of like a franchiser. He's trying to get some, he's trying to get you to do what he did. He says, if I can put it into anything that, some people might understand, it's that he wants us to be a franchisee of God, Inc. And you will be a God too. And apparently, he may very well be a franchisee under somebody else. It goes back ad nauseum and into the future ad nauseum. And he enjoys that life that he produces. He likes being productive. And he's trying to find people that are basically the same way. I don't think you don't really have to grok it. You really don't. You don't have to have a full understanding of the whole thing immediately. But you need to be that kind of person who says, I am willing to put forth the effort. I am willing to do this thing. You really kind of have to be, what's your word for it? You really have to be fully invested. His purposes need to become your purposes if you want to be like God is. Now, you know, he has a lot of people working for him. You know, like I think of a franchisee that I've worked for, which is McDonald's. There really needs to be a reasonably good group of people who are willing to just do kind of the gut work of reality. You know, the guys that fry the burgers, do everything else, keep the store clean, work at the counter. You need all these people. Of course, in a capitalistic society, it's all about telling them that there is always a possibility that they can become a franchisee as well. On a certain level, if you don't think it too hard on this earth, there is you can decide that there is an unlimited number of possibilities for new McDonald's stores. And of course, the real interesting thing about it is that you don't just end up wanting to have one, you want to have several. Now, this isn't about money. This isn't about God trying to scrape his profits off of your profits. But that's exactly what a franchisee kind of does. That's why God isn't a perfect franchisee. Because for him, probably the greatest ultimate desire is to have as many God children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, all the way down the line. That's what fulfills him. That's what makes him happy. That's what fulfills him. That's the payment, if you're going to be a capitalist about it. That's his payment for all the effort. And like I said, there's going to be a vast number of people that aren't interested in that. But we need to give everybody a decent opportunity to try to grok on some level what this is about, so they can make a choice about whether they're okay with it or not. Some people figure it out here. Apparently, to a certain extent, you can figure it out elsewhere, but to a large extent, unless you're really that kind of person, it isn't like you can all of a sudden develop yourself into that kind of a person later. You just have to kind of be or become that kind of person while you're on this earth and you're somewhat, what's a good term for it, plastic. You are easily malleable. Once you go into the more elevated realms, or further on in your development, you remain how you are. You don't have this kind of a body that can really do a lot more and a lot different things. Oh yeah, man. I see these prairie dogs. I don't know if they're playing or fighting with these birds. But it happens here all the time. There's this little bunch of prairie dogs right by the side of the road. You have to be careful that you don't run over them. Anyway. But with this understanding that a whole lot of these people aren't going to want to have anything to do with that. Or just kind of want a 9-to-5 job where they have some liberty and they can be creative on some level, but not fully so. You have other people who just say, I just don't want to worry about things. You know, the people who just don't want to be concerned. And those are the terrestrial people. They want something nice, but they just want to, you know, it's like getting a lifetime subscription on a cruise line. You know, people who say, I live on a cruise ship and I love it. You know, all the food I can eat. There's always activities to do. It changes up often enough because they have to keep other people wanting to go to cruise lines. Don't always give the same experience. They want to vary it a little bit. People come and go. I think it's really like that. That it's like living on a cruise ship. And then the celestial kingdom is for everybody else. Who are just going to have the same basic experience they have here, except that, you know, it's kind of like being a welfare recipient. It's kind of like being, you know, sort of a, it's really the perfect form because I think it's mostly because you have a terrestrial body and you, which is really quite, limited. There's a lot of things you can't do. I think there are a lot of things that are removed. Liars, stealers, and cheats don't go to the upper ones. They just don't. And so you'll be surrounded by people who are trying to take advantage of you, doing things like that. Now, there's only certain things that they can take advantage of you on, probably not anything that's really vital. Nobody's going to die. Death is going to be over. Things like starvation and stuff like that are going to be over. Will you still be able to take advantage of one another? You know, it's such a tempting thing here on this planet. Of course, it's really hard to say what parts of this planet aren't being affected by Satan, because you're not going to have Satan messing around with you anymore and getting you to do things. I really don't know, but it bears the largest resemblance to here. And if this Bruce Hafen has the same, and he seems a smart guy. And as I think about it, I think he's trying to explain it in the terms that he has. And he's very comfortable with the terms that he has. So, given all these things, given being a very strange organization, that really tries to create a group of people that have the same attitude and the same labor as God does and desires to do that for eternity, which is really the only interesting thing to do for eternity. Like I've told Lisa so many times, I said, I'm not interested in doing IT work for the rest of eternity. So therefore, and I don't recreate, therefore, I'm no good for the terrestrial kingdom, which is not really having anything to do, but to enjoy the cruise ship menu, is to go to that place. And a lot of people, that's what they really want. So, in doing this, right now my calling is Sunday school president, and struggling with the different personalities there are with it, just trying to say, you know what, I think I'm gonna just expand the field of play, knowing that some people are just going to continue to do things the way they do them. There is a more interesting way, but they're almost uninterested in letting things go that way. You go, well, the best I can do now is just have more people doing what we're doing. And these things are supposed to be discussions. Because people say, well, if they're not reading at home, then doing the discussions isn't good. And I need to, you know, I'm going to be the teacher and I'm going to kind of coerce them into doing what I think they should be doing. Teachers really easily fall into the trap that what they do and their part in it is extremely vital. Of course, it's their, for many of them, it is their profession. And that's the, you know, they've always got this self-interest. It's okay because God's got a self-interest too, but he's not going to push you into it. All these resources available. And it's right there. And he's not gonna put forth much pressure. Says, what we probably need to be doing on this point is trying to funnel people toward the church. And the incredible thing is now with something called the internet, you don't have to physically go to where somebody is to introduce them to the gospel. You can do your finding in 1,000 different ways. The church has only limited resources and understanding on how they want to do this. We need a lot more people working on it, and we can't make them all employees of the church. It's just that simple. If you're waiting for the church to find an effective way to touch your great uncle, it probably isn't going to happen. It says, so you need to find a way to touch your great uncle. Knowing that, he has full ability to say, I'm not interested in what you're selling. And to a certain extent, we don't have to worry about making sure that we do a fantastic job, because the fantastic job will come later. The actual goal of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, which is to be the mechanism through which people can attain to godhood, may not even be interesting to that many people. But they've got to have the opportunity, and that's what God does. And it makes for crazy buggers. It really does. For saying you have to introduce it to a lot of people who just are going to say no, 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 until you run into somebody who says yes. But the bad thing is you also have a whole lot of people who just say, ooh, somebody's paying attention to me. And they're spending a lot of time doing that, you know. So the way I do it with games or with blogs and stuff like that, the people who do it with YouTube channels, they get sucked into the monetization of it, which is dicey at best. But it's there. It's reality. I don't know if it's good or bad. I have no idea. They seem to like it okay. So when it comes to that kind of stuff, like I said, as a Sunday school president, it says I'm trying to get more people to do what more people need to do. And I don't need to do it through some kind of weird making them insane. You know, constantly bugging them about things until they finally say, okay, leave me alone. I don't want to get blocked. So, I was thinking about using, for me personally, ministering has been tricky, but this is definitely something purposeful to engage ministering brothers and sisters in. Is going out and helping them do all the things they're supposed to do. Kind of the job of an ordained teacher. They're supposed to go into the homes of the saints. They're supposed to make sure that they're about their prayers, about reading the scriptures, the daily devotions, whatever. The things that need to be done, taking care of their families, helping get them into the habit of being the kind of people that they want to be. And I was, and for me personally, I was going to do kind of a YouTube channel specifically to almost kind of be doing a humorous parody of the Gospel Principles Manual. Be engaging that way. Find that such a wonderful resource. If I'm done with that one, maybe I will also do one on the Latter-day Saint. Duties and blessings of the priesthood. There's two versions of that. They're broken into two pieces. I think it's because they're supposed to be, annual courses, and they're not. Kind of like a no agenda for these manuals. We have five of them. Gospel Principles, Duties and Blessings and Principles A and B, those are two. And then the Latter-day Saint Woman A and B, those are two. and going through it page by page, or if it's actually rendered well on the web, just going to the web page for that particular that particular site. And we call it parody. So the church can't come back and say, well, we're going to sue you for having done this. And you go, no, it's parody. You can't touch us. And the lawyers will say, don't even bother. We're not even going to talk about it. Maybe something good will come of it. I think that's what we can probably do. And if we make any money at it, that's great. Make it, entertain them. As you go along, make songs out of it. Make other things. Now, this is just what you have with. And Lisa's going to do what she does, the great balloon popper. And I'm going to do what I do, which is the pie in the sky, crazy, you can call it autism if you want to. Whatever. I like it. So anyway, yes, this is what I'm going to propose to the next group of people. We have teacher councils. One of them is basically, for the Sunday school teachers, which we've just had yesterday, and the next one, which is going to happen next week, is basically for the priesthood, the Relief Society, and the youth groups. And this is really interesting because I find out what weird things are going on that really need to be happening in the home from the Sunday school class. And then what I do is I go to the people that run ministering and say, this is what you guys need to be ministering about. He says, you need to go into the homes and make sure people are being diligent unto prayer and things like that. He says, that's what I propose to you. He says, I'm going to start doing that with the people that I have on my responsibility is to make sure that they do their prayers on a regular basis. You know, make sure you do your daily prayers. Make sure you do some sort of daily scripture study. Come follow me so you can be prepared for class, for Sunday school, and listen to conference, so that you can be ready for Relief Society and priesthood. Not a bad way to engage with life is to do it exactly this way. And don't be shy in sharing that with other people who just want checkboxes. You always tell people, oh, you don't want to do it by checkboxes. You go, you know what? Checkboxes are great. I want you to do more than that, but make sure these things are being done. And then you can feel a little bit better about yourself. You don't have to feel so dang guilty all the time. Are you getting made to the, you know, are these the only attributes to making it to, quote, heaven? And you go, yeah. It says, if that's your only concept of it, this will keep you out of hell. So much more you can do, but this is the absolute minimum of us promising you that you're not going to go to hell. That you're going to do all these things and you're going to keep very basic commandments. Oh, there it is. Wow. I think I've kind of worked out the thing you can do when people are just unwilling to do anything more. But yet you tell them, you know, I think on one level, you interfaced with this thing so you could have a church that is saving your soul, which is what you kind of bargained for. And you go, this is the kind of thing that will get you to the celestial kingdom. If you do all these things, you probably should make it the celestial kingdom. Not talking about exaltation. There's always an upsell. This is now, you're going to have to figure out the larger thing to do. I know we're trying to get to the higher and holier. And you go, but we still got so many people who are just fishing around in the muck for something shinier along those lines. And you go, yeah, there's all that. Alrighty. I'm here at work, so it's time to stop. But this is good because yes, I plan on introducing, here's something that people, it says, I struggle with ministering because it's way too floppy and I'm not exactly sure what I want to accomplish. But now I've come up with something where it's like, hey, this is good. I can do this. And, so there it is. I'll stop here and talk to you another time. Thanks for listening to Cohen Meander. It's Jason Nemer. Have a great day.